Hey there, Rad Dad listeners. This is your host, Kirill Zubovsky. Today, my guest on the show is Jason Schuller. Jason was once an employee at Boeing, working on their static pages, and WordPress was just getting started. Jason realized that WordPress could be a very powerful tool, and he tried to get Boeing to adopt it, but they didn't want to change their ways. So Jason striked out on his own. The company kind of started like a fluke, and you'll hear that on the podcast. Grew rapidly. He was making thousands and thousands of dollars. And for a couple of years, he was just completely immersed in the business. And then, one day he sold it and focused on his family. So let's hear his story, how a life for an entrepreneur ties with a family life, what it's like to run a business with your spouse, and all sorts of advantages and disadvantages of being a solo entrepreneur. Jason, without further ado, welcome to the show. Do you mind just sharing your life story in 30 seconds?
My life story in 30 seconds. I was born and raised in Black Diamond, Washington, which is out in the country, way south of Seattle. I grew up on 5 acres with my two older brothers. I was the youngest. And so I had a great childhood just out in the country, enjoying nature, and that's kind of what seeded loving the state that I live in, you know, just being around mountains and trees and trails. And I think that's kind of seated in me to this day, something I try to pass on to my daughter as much as I can. But I got married in 1998. I worked at the Boeing company for 10 years, taught myself web design and development in the company, left the company when I realized that was a dead-end job at Boeing. If you're not an engineer, there's no place for web designers there. Started my WordPress theme business right after, and here we are today.
That's amazing. So the WordPress theme business, what sparked that curiosity?
I think what it was, while I was working at the Boeing company, and I've told this story so many times, but I think it still holds true to this day because I believe they're still using static HTML for all their internal websites at Boeing. And what brought my attention to WordPress was the fact that you could have a singular WordPress installation, create a theme for WordPress, and power all those websites with one single WordPress installation. And that's really what kind of brought my attention to WordPress and wanting to solve that problem for Boeing and fix that internal web infrastructure. And so that kind of just led me to WordPress and creating WordPress themes and kind of being in that world. It was an open source tool that was, it was obvious there was a big community growing around it at the time. And so I was able to easily kind of build a following, you know, just by blogging and tweeting and building and putting things out there for free. And so that's what kind of spurred the interest in WordPress and WordPress theming.
Yeah, you've talked about this before, how you were lucky to build this community as you were building the themes, right?
And
by,
I think
by
it was,
sharing everything in public?
I think it was stars aligning too, because WordPress was kind of in its infancy back then, but the community was already active and growing. So getting in at the ground level was absolutely the key to me being able to build that following and then that business.
What was the reaction from your family and your wife and your friends when here's you working at Boeing, you know, an airplane company, and you be building this weird HTML pages at night?
I think for my parents especially, I don't think my mom understands to this day what I did. My dad gets it. He still doesn't believe it. It's something that he's really proud of. When he hears, he still brings up Press 75, the theme business, even though I sold it over, you know, almost 6 years ago now, you know. And when I first launched the theme business and I told my wife, hey, you know, there's something here, she didn't quite believe it at first, but after a couple months and there was continual increase in revenue with WordPress themes, I think she caught on pretty quickly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mentioned it on the Yo podcast, and we'll link to it, right? How you guys went for a walk, you came back, and there's thousands of dollars in your bank account from this.
That's basically it, yeah.
Was that the point where your wife finally realized, okay,
it wasn't
maybe
that
he's
point,
doing something?
No. She thought that was a fluke. So I had this, I don't know, I've always had this interest in video and video-centric content and building websites around video. There's something appealing to that medium in my eyes and being able to design for it. And there weren't a lot of people doing that at the time for WordPress. And mm-hmm. so the idea was create a really cool WordPress theme that is essentially like the Hulu for WordPress, because mm-hmm. Hulu had just launched and it was literally just this grid of thumbnails. And you click a thumbnail, you get a video. And so I wanted to see if I could replicate that in WordPress. And again, this is back in 2008, mm-hmm. you know. And I think I put out an initial version for free, and a potential client saw it. And he's like, hey, you know, I would like to hire you to build this out a little bit mm-hmm. more. And I said, cool, cool, that's great. And so I built it out. The client didn't pay. And so I told my wife, I said, hey, you know, let's try and just put this this build up online, you know, as a paid product. And so, again, the story goes, I went for a walk, I came back, and it had sold a couple hundred copies or something like that. Yeah. There was a decent amount of money. But again, my wife thought it was a fluke. She's like, we can't build a business out of this. But I just kept on it, kept doing client work for a couple months, but at the same time building new WordPress themes and building the actual front for the business. And I think after one or two more WordPress themes, she was well on board. I think it was 3 months later, we were making more via WordPress themes than we were via client work. So
was your wife working with you on the client work?
Or? She was working for a bank at the time. Mm-hmm. So she, I think she stayed on at the bank for, I want to say 6 months after I started the WordPress theme business. And then we were doing well enough with the WordPress theme business where she was able to leave her job and then just come on as, I want to say, you know, the business manager, accounting and things like that. She took care of all the taxes, all the finances for the business, and that was kind of her role from then on.
Well, there's a lot of great lessons to unpack here. Once, right, your client didn't pay, but you didn't go and moan about it on the internet. You just turned that into an opportunity, which actually right. paid, which is great, because most people wouldn't do that. Most people would say, well, this is awful, you know, I blame the client. But you said, well, fine, I'll do something else with it, right? And it's such a great outlook on life. And
yeah, don't get me wrong. I think I was fairly pissed, but
been pissed that something, you know, that you can't change isn't.
Yeah,
gonna,
I think that's what it was. Definitely the motivation. Like, screw you. I'm gonna take, you know, what I've built. I'm not gonna let mm-hmm. it go to the waste. I'm gonna put it out there and try and make something of it for sure.
I hope your client from back in the day listens. But the other part is too, right? A lot of people always say from the design community, it's like, well, how do I deal with all those things? I love design. I love pixels. What about all the other stuff? But in your mm-hmm. case, it's just like, well, you already live with your wife. Why don't you can ask for help, and two of you can have a business.
Yep.
Do you think it strengthened your relationship, or was there a point of tension about it?
I think it definitely strengthened our relationship, because we were both able to finally live the way we wanted to live instead of being tied to these, you know, 9-to-5 office mm-hmm. commute to work type of jobs. Mm-hmm. And I think, and again, we were both pretty young still at the time, and going from that office type of position to what we were doing literally 6 months after leaving my day job, it was like a wake up call. Like, oh wow, we can live differently and sustain this business, and we can travel now, and we can make our own hours. And you know, I think it was a huge strengthener in our relationship for sure. If anything, I wish I could go back and take advantage of that more, because I do feel like we got wrapped up in the business a little bit too much, you know, at a certain point. So,
well, let's expand on this a little bit more, but you don't only have the business, you sold the business. What's your wife doing right now?
She is a stay-at-home mom.
That's awesome. That's really hard and very demanding. So
it's harder job than I have for sure.
Yeah, but you say you wish you would have taken more advantage of your free business time, sort of. And I want to know more about this, because like I told you before we started recording, that it seems like right now this workaholic culture is really promoted, right? Yeah. And everybody is working hard so they can become billionaires later. But the question is, what happens later when you have all the money?
Yeah.
And some people do really well with their free time. But then if you look at Silicon Valley, there are so many millionaires who are just, you know, unhealthy, don't do anything with their life. They just have all the money. And makes you wonder, like, what's the point? You know, if, to me, it feels like if you're made all the money, you should just check out from social media and go, like, hike a forest for 6 months or something like that.
And it's one of those things where it's, you know, hindsight is 20/20. It's the old saying. Because when you go from a day job to building your own business and you're making the type of money that we were making when we had the business, of course you get wrapped up in the excitement of all that, because neither of us had ever experienced that before. I mean, my parents were fairly well off, but they worked really, really hard. My dad was an engineer at Boeing. He put in his time, and but my wife's parents were different. Her dad was a contractor, again, really hard job, but they always kind of struggled to make that bottom line, even today, you know. So going from that office type of environment where it's like, okay, I've got to put in my 32 years of work and maybe then I'll be able to retire, to, wow, you know, we're making more than I ever would have imagined I'd ever make doing a business. You get wrapped up in all the excitement of that. And so you don't think of, okay, how do we even out, you know, the amount of effort we're putting in with the amount of freedom we have to do other things. So I do think, again, we got wrapped up in that aspect of the business quite a bit more than maybe we should have at the time. And if I could go back, I think I would even it out a little bit more and use that freedom to, you know, my wife and I are big travelers. We love to travel. We love to see the world. I would have used a lot more of that time to kind of travel a little bit more, spend a little bit more free time with my wife, and you know, work on the road versus just building the office, working in the office all day long, and just making that business the priority for the amount of time that we did.
How long did you run the business while it was in its heydays?
You know, so first year we launched in 2008, and I think within 6 months we were making, I want to say, around $16,000 a month with theme sales. And then I think it was around 9 months we were making 20, and then 10 months we were making almost $30,000 a month.
And for you, it's basically 90% profit.
It's 90% profit because it's not like a real manufactured product where you have to reproduce the product. You're literally just making passive income, which in my opinion is the best kind of income. And there's so much opportunity even today to do that. So I want to say the heydays of the business were 2008, 2009, 2010-ish. And then I want to say around midway 2010, that's when, you know, the WordPress community was massive at that point. And there was so much in way of WordPress themes and premium WordPress themes, and the market got really, really saturated. And so you had to find really creative ways to stay relevant in the business. And so I want to say it's around 2010, 2011-ish, where I started to kind of make some follies in how I was running the business and what I was interested in and where WordPress was going, and not being able to adapt to that community, or maybe even not wanting to adapt to that community. And for me, it's more the platform itself becoming more and more bloated as the years went on, and customers wanting more and more in way of functionality. And for me, it's all about like minimalism and less is better, you know. Don't activate 200 plugins on your WordPress site because you don't need them, type of thing. But that's what customers were demanding, and I wasn't able to adapt to that in a way that suited me and that suited my customer base. So I wanted to say around 2011 is where the business started to take a decline.
But it sounds like largely it was because you had a vision and you wanted to stick to that vision, and it misaligned with where the WordPress community was trying to. Maybe not even the community, right? But as soon as you have one rocket ship kind of pushing a certain direction, that becomes like the gold standard, whether or not it's actually good for people.
Right.
Right. So hindsight 2020, would you say it's best to follow your customer and like keep building those things for them?
It depends. I mean, because I don't think I would have been happy doing that. It definitely didn't suit what I wanted to do with my time. But again, if I could go back, I do think I could have gotten creative in saying, okay, I don't have to run this business on my own. I don't have to make the WordPress themes. Maybe I could hire a team to make those WordPress themes to suit that customer. So mm-hmm. still have a hand in the business, but maybe offset some of that income by hiring people to sustain that aspect of the business so that I can do other things. And instead, what I did is I just kind of checked out, right? And I would release a theme here and there, but I was more focused on creating unique solutions at that time, trying to check out of the WordPress world and build new unique things that were kind of outside of that community. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest misstep I took, was not recognizing how special it is to create a business like that and how hard it is to replicate what I did in that community, and not utilizing just that framework and that groundwork that was built in that business, and checking out in a way where the business was still sustaining and I could go off and do my own thing at the same time. So I think that was my biggest folly, I want to say, with mm-hmm. Press 75.
What about the other competitors that emerged around the time where it got really popular? Like, have any of them gotten really big and really successful since? Or
I want to, you know, it's funny because this community of premium WordPress theme folks, you know, when I got started with Press 75, there were only a handful of people doing it. There was me, there was Brian Gardner, there was 80 from Woo Themes, there was Corey Miller from iThemes. There was mm-hmm. really just a handful of folks that had premium WordPress theme businesses, and we're all still friends to this day.
And you know folks. Them by name, so it was actually individual contributors building
businesses. Yeah, we kind of built friendships. It was weird. It wasn't like a... we never saw each other as competitors. Mm-hmm. There was just enough to go around where we kind of built these relationships through WordCamps, and we mm-hmm. met each other and we discussed, you know, what we were doing with the business, and it was all, you know, just fun and games for us. And we all became, I want to say, fairly good friends. And I still talk to a lot of those people today. But I want to say around 2010, 2011, again, the community and the theme business in general just got really, really saturated. Mm-hmm. People were getting really creative with not just WordPress themes, but WordPress theme frameworks and page builders. And, you know, so it just went way beyond the core product that I was creating for my community.
Makes sense.
And one of the other big mistakes I made, I think, was trying to compete on a level that all these other folks were competing on, who had teams to develop mm-hmm. these things, and a team of developers and a team of designers, and they were making these monstrous products, you know, that were suiting to what the customer base was back then. And I was trying to do it all on my own, you know,
right?
Instead of just staying small, I think there's something to just saying, this is my little pool of customer base. And, you know, I'm gonna focus on that and stay small. And I think that would have been another way where I could have sustained that business further, is just by sticking to what I did best and staying small.
No, I think it's great advice, because it's probably applicable to every business today, right? Even if we look at like Lyft versus Uber decided to eat everything in their path, while Lyft said, nope, we're just going to be this and do that. And now look, they're in public markets. Lyft is actually doing better, right? After their IPO, or even like Basecamp versus Slack, I guess. Which the other end of that is Basecamp, who said, you know what, we're not going to build Slack. Like, we know it might become important and valuable and like a huge company, but we have our users. And say in Basecamp, because I'm mentioning them because DHH was also a guest on the show, right?
Yeah.
But I've met people who started using that product its first year. Mm-hmm. It's like 2 decades ago, right?
Right.
And they're still using it, which is so like you can definitely build that, right? As long as you find that audience and maintain it. But I guess I love what you said, like that other companies had the teams and you
your choice was basically build a team and do what they do or stick to what you were doing. But the challenge was when you want to build what they're doing, but doing it by yourself. That's basically a recipe for a disaster, right? Because you overexert yourself and you can't catch up, I guess.
And you're really not building the product that you want to build anyways. Mm-hmm. And so the passion, I strongly believe if the passion's not there, if you're not interested in what you're doing, that definitely shows in the product that you're putting out. And mm-hmm. I think that was the case for me as well. I was trying to compete on a level that I didn't at my core even want to compete on, but I felt like I had to mm-hmm. in order to stay relevant. And that was definitely a big mistake for sure.
So other than Boeing, what was your business experience like before?
Zero, I want to say. I came from a family of, again, my dad was an engineer. He immigrated to the United States with his parents from Germany. And so there was this big work ethic that was built into his core, I think. You mm-hmm. work hard, you know, you either get a job or you build a business or you go to school and you achieve in that way. So mm-hmm. it's more of this traditional approach of go to school, get a good job, work that job, mm-hmm. do as best as you can, and retire. Mm-hmm. And he laid the groundwork for me and my brothers to do that as well. I mean, it was really nice in our house where it was set up to the point where they said, okay, as long as you're going to college, you can stay home. We'll pay your bills. We'll pay for your school. But if you're not going to college anymore, it's time to leave and figure something out on your own, you know? And for my two older brothers, that worked really well. They're very much, I want to say book smart, you know? My middle brother, he's an engineer at Boeing and has a really good career. My oldest brother, he went to school to be a CPA, but he's running a orthopedics practice here in Washington and doing really well at that. So both very well educated and book smart and good at their jobs. And I just kind of fell short in that department. Call it dyslexia, call it ADD, OCD, all these things, you know, these labels that we put on things, but I fell into that quarter category where school was never my strong suit, you mm-hmm. know? And so I was never able to achieve on the same level that my brothers achieved. And so I was able to get a job at Boeing as a technical writer. And I knew that I needed to find something that interested me there mm-hmm. while I was there, because there are all these opportunities to learn and grow and figure out what you want to do while you're working at that company. And the web just kind of suited me. Mm-hmm. And I was able to kind of build an understanding for the web by reverse engineering websites and was able to teach myself design and development in that way. So
imagine being in those shoes, but 50 years ago when the web didn't exist. I wonder where the opportunities were like then.
Yeah, I think if the web didn't exist, I would have found my way in a physical product maybe. Mm-hmm. Because I still, even today, I have this desire to make something that's real, something that's physical, something you can touch, something that exists beyond just what we call the internet. There's something about that intrigues me, and I think sometime down the road, it's something I want to do for sure.
Right, and that's your current businesses. It's still themes, but it's once again, it's that desire to actually be able to interact with something.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I assume no business experience, just the Boeing job, right?
Yep.
And same. How long did it take you to learn WordPress and get that going before you started with the first theme? Before you got that first client?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know PHP at all. Uh-huh. I think my understanding of the web was for the most part just HTML and CSS. I was really actually lacking in JavaScript skills still back then, but when WordPress came along and I started seeing what people were putting out there in way of WordPress and open source themes, that's when I really things started to connect with me. And what it boiled down to was downloading one of these freebie themes that was out there on the internet that somebody had put together and just put out there for free. And pulling it up, I think I was using Dreamweaver at the time and looking at the source code. And what I started doing was just breaking it, you know, okay, you know, what happens if I change this line of code, or what happens if I do this or that? And by breaking the theme and trying to achieve something different and making that theme do what I want it to do, the understanding for PHP and JavaScript and HTML and CSS and how all those things kind of come together, it just clicked in my head. And it was, I want to say, a really rapid understanding kind of developed over the next year of playing around that way and just experimenting and breaking and building and breaking and rebuilding and putting things out there and blogging about it while I did it. You know, that was definitely the key.
I love hearing you say this because in many ways, that's how I've learned web and coding as well. And I think for some types of people, that's just the only way to get it done, or the most interesting, you know, like exhilarating way where you don't feel like it's work or you're learning, you're just playing with things.
Yep.
But code is getting so popular now, and there's so many coding schools, like Lambda School is probably one of the most known examples now, right? But it's always like people say, well, how do I do this? I need to go to school. I need somebody to teach me that. And it's just like, I guess maybe it's true for some people, but for some people, it's just like, just play with it. It's Legos, right? It's no different. You just learn over time, and it's actually pretty easy.
People are so afraid of breaking the internet, and I don't understand why, because it's just, they're just building blocks, like you said, just like anything else. Break things. It's how you learn.
So let's see. You build a successful business. Eventually, it's turned to plateau because of all the competition and the space was changing. You sold the business to another, were they Steamaker at the time?
It was a custom WordPress theme agency. Mm-hmm. And so one of the biggest opportunities that nobody really captured in way of premium WordPress themes was how many people wanted customizations to those themes. And so this agency, Westwork, they came along and they saw that hole that was kind of missing, because customers would buy the theme and they would say, oh, I want this change to be made. And every one of us, I don't know anybody at the time that was doing those customizations in-house for those people. Mm-hmm. So it was money lost, right? And this agency came along and said, here's something we can do and build a business on. And so they actually made connections with all the premium WordPress theme people who were running their businesses and letting all that business go, and said, okay, if you send us those referrals, you know, we'll kick back, you know, we'll do the hard work and we'll kick back to you. And so they were able to build a pretty solid business by doing that at first. And I think, so when I sold the business, it was in 2014, and they were wanting to expand into doing their own WordPress themes. And so it kind of made sense for them to purchase a theme business that had history and that had a following and still had some kind of relevancy in the space instead of starting from scratch.
Do you have any advice around this acquisition? And it seems like you waited for quite a while to actually sell the business. You know, at what point do you think you should have considered selling it, or are you just giving it to somebody else with with like royalties or something like that? Because it seemed like a few years into it, it became different from what you envisioned, right? So how long did it take until you really realized, like, okay, it's probably time to be done with this?
And again, it's one of those hindsight is 2020 type of things. There are a lot of things I would do differently, but if my goal was to sell, I should have sold earlier, when there was still more relevancy and I could have made a higher turn on the business itself. So I waited too long, and I was essentially able to sell the business for, I want to say, it's not next to nothing, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. It was enough to build a little bit more runway for me after the business was sold, but it was almost nothing in way of what you would consider acquisition today, even in the WordPress theme space. So it was a quick buy for them, and it was too late for me, I want to say. But at the same time, I had this business that was almost, I want to say, dead. It went from, I think at its height, $42,000 a month recurring to, I think when I sold the business, it was making $14,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a drastic decline.
Still not insignificant. Still double like an average salary, which is pretty awesome. And you said that the money you've made over the years is what allowed you to like yeah, have a I mean, buffer my, for the next couple of
my
years.
My wife and I played it smart. I want to say we put away as much as we can. We didn't really change our lifestyles all that much. Mm-hmm. We had already had our house before this business took off, but we did utilize a little bit of the money to update our house, and mm-hmm. I built a little office. Our garage was falling down anyway, so I built a home office, which I still use today. So that's, I think, where the money went for the most part, is investing in the house, and then, you know, doing some trips here and there. And then other than that, we pretty much put as much as we possibly could away. Mm-hmm. So it was more the money that we put away during the height of the business than the actual sale of the business mm-hmm. that allowed us to kind of have runway after the business was sold.
But again, great point, right? Because a lot of people probably wouldn't put any money away while running their business because it'll keep reinvesting into the business. But you yeah. never plan that one day the business might go away, whether you sold it or not, right? It's just yeah. like there's this mentality of always just growing yeah. instead of like, well, don't forget to think about yourself. Your life is also worth something.
yeah.
Yeah.
And I attribute that to my wife. I mean, she was the one who was smart in that way, more so than me. If it were me on my own, I don't know how things would have gone. My wife is very much more level-headed when it comes to money and what you should do.
When did you guys have your daughter in this whole rollercoaster?
So we had our daughter in 2013. And we sold the business a year later in 2014.
So I guess daughter also played part role in convincing you that it was finally, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So now that you have the house, you know, some savings, like how did you change your life when the business was no longer there and you had a kid?
It was a wake-up call, right? Because immediately after I sold the business, I don't want to say immediately, it was about a year after I sold the business, with multiple attempts at doing something different and not being successful again. Mm-hmm. That's when I realized, wow, you know, what I had was really, really special in that business. And I'm going to have to completely rethink my approach to making money now that that's gone. And especially when you have kids and there's this little, you know, these two little eyes looking up at you and you're seeing the future and the responsibility, it definitely comes compounding down more so than ever in your life, I think. So I think it was about a year after I sold the business and where I realized that I really had to kind of get creative and think about what I was going to do next.
Hmm. But did you change your daily routine or like, you know, did you go travel for 6 months?
No, no. I think a year after we sold the business, we definitely kind of put things on a little bit more of a lockdown in way of like our spending habits mm-hmm. and what we were doing with our money. It was more, we went into almost sustaining mode at that point. Uh-huh. Okay, what do we need to do to sustain while Jason goes off and tries these other things? So what I was doing was, I want to say that first year I almost took completely off. After I sold the business, not off, I was mm-hmm. working on like ideas and concepts for new businesses. Mm-hmm. But after that first year, I had to start balancing with, okay, you know, I might need to start taking on some client work while mm-hmm. I work on new ideas mm-hmm. and businesses. And I think it was maybe 6 months after that, there was an opportunity to go to work for a startup. And that's when I said, all right, you know, maybe I just do this for a little while. And, you know, because it kind of solves that problem of, you know, what am I going to do to mm-hmm. Make the living that we need to make without touching the savings that we had put away.
So did you end up working for a startup at that time?
I did, yeah. So Drew Wilson.
From Plasso.
Yeah, from Plasso.
He's also on the show.
Oh, was he on the
yeah.
show?
Yeah.
Oh. I I almost don't remember how I got in touch with Drew. He had built a payments tool called mm-hmm. Quixly, I think, at the time. And I was trying to use Quixly as a payment solution for my WordPress themes. And so I think that's how Drew kind of, and what Drew was doing kind of got seated in my head. And I started talking to Drew back then. I think that was around 2010, 2011-ish. Mm-hmm. And so I would talk to Drew on and off, you know, throughout the years. And we built, I want to say, a quote-unquote online, you know, Twitter type of relationship mm-hmm. where we both had an appreciation for what each other was doing, you know, and you kind of bounce off of each other. So it was 2015, I think, is when Drew was, he kind of made the decision that Plaso was going to be his thing. He was going to build a team. He was going to raise money. And that was going to be what he was doing. Because he's kind of like me, where he's this maker guy, right? Like, where he comes up with ideas, he puts the product out there, see what it, you know, almost like spaghetti on a wall, you see what sticks. And Plaso was by far, I think, one of the biggest things he had put out recently. And so he reached out to me, and I think it was 2015, and asked if I'd be a part of that, like, that core team that he was putting together. And it was weird, but it was kind of a struggle of a decision. You know, what am I giving up in way of building my own things versus going to work for Drew and working on his thing? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I decided that the opportunity to work with Drew and be a part of a bigger team for once, as opposed to staying on my own, was maybe I would have realized something out of that I wasn't getting, you know, in prior years. So.
But you didn't have to move to Carlsbad or anything.
No,
like that.
The entire team was remote. There were, there were people spread out all over the world. There were two people in the UK. There was, you know, California folks working on Plaso. There were people in Portland, and then a couple people in Seattle too. Mm-hmm. So.
It's an interesting experience because, you know, you had the chops to start a company, but then you also had, I guess, the humility to accept that, okay, well, for a while you can go work with somebody else and it's not really a big deal, right? Which it's good for the family. It's good for the business. Like it's
good for the soul, I want to say too, because it gives you perspective that you don't have when you just keep doing the same thing, you know, by yourself over and over again. And for me, being a part of that team and being a part of Plaso and just kind of getting out of my comfort zone and working on a product that wasn't mine, but I felt it was mine at the same time. I felt like I owned a piece of it, not just in equity, but just as a whole and the respect I had for Drew and what he was building. I wanted to do good by him, you know? And so it was good to be a part of that for, I want to say, the almost 2 years that I worked at Plaso before he kind of had to regroup the team and restructure based on, like, what investors were needing at the time. So,
well, eventually he sold it to GoDaddy, right? So in a way it worked out, maybe not so much for you, but for the business. And
I mean, it was a life changer for Drew. I mean, all the work, all the sweat equity he put into that business, and he just kind of never gave up and decided that was it. You know, Plaso is the thing. I'm going to make it work one way or the other. And he did good by all the people that worked for Plaso. He gave all of us the opportunity to have a little equity in the business. So we all kind of, anybody who chose to have a little equity in that business realized a little bit from that GoDaddy sale.
Even though you weren't there for a couple of years, it still worked out. That's awesome.
It was amazing. I mean, I'm sure the team he's building at GoDaddy right now is realizing that too. Drew's a great guy.
Well, so everything you know from your startup experience, Boeing experience, life experience, how are you now channeling that into your daughter?
It's a struggle because right now I want to say, like, where I'm at now and the balance I'm having to find now with what I do is, it's a struggle for me. You know, I'm in this weird transition period where I've gone from this awesome passive income to this place where I have this skill set that people want so that I can leverage that in way of contract work, right? Mm-hmm. So right now I'm doing a contract with Microsoft, and it's awesome. You know, the team I'm working with and what I'm doing with them, I think I'm providing value to the team, and I'm getting a little bit in way of diversity that I don't usually get on my own. And yet it's a 20-hour a week contract, so I'm still able to balance that with other things that I'm building on my own in way of potential new businesses in the future that I launch. I don't think... once you build a business like I built in Press 75, it's hard to let go of the idea that you can do that again. And I don't think I ever will. And so I think the idea of not giving up in what you believe in, I think that's what I'm trying to instill most in my daughter. And I definitely see that passion in her. Like, when she gets her mind set on something, there's no deterring her from doing it, no matter how much you say no. So it's frustrating on one level because she refuses to compromise. But at the same time, I think it's that grit that is going to make her successful at whatever she decides to do. And so I'm trying to foster that as much as possible without losing my hair at the same time.
How old is she now?
She's 6.
Okay. Do you see, maybe a loaded question, but sort of like in the world we live in, you know, you having this knowledge versus, say, not to put Microsoft on a spot, but, you know, yeah, a more like stable environment, parents in Microsoft, or parents with similar, like parents in Boeing, your dad, who, you know, spent 30 years working there. Do you find it difficult to kind of coexist? Or when you raise your child, you know, do you teach her something different in general? Like, you know, how do you balance the world, which is a bit more stable and a bit more conservative, mm-hmm, versus this ambitions of a startup guy trying to, you know, never giving up in itself, yeah, is actually most people would call it being stubborn.
Yeah.
It's just startup folks call it never giving up because it leads to a positive outcome, and everybody else says you're stubborn because they just don't like you doing things your way. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you juggle that?
You know, I think back to what my dad did, you know, and my mom worked a little bit too. She worked part-time at certain jobs, but my dad was definitely gone, you know. And I do want to say that my dad enjoyed his job, but he told me a couple years ago, and this kind of stuck in my head, if he could go back and have what I have with my daughter, the ability to be home, to have those moments of her growing up and seeing those transitions as she goes from this little baby to this little person, you know, he said he's extremely envious of that, no matter what the struggle is that I'm having right now. So, he's said that a number of times, and that sticks with me. And so I definitely want to maintain that balance as much as possible and instill that in my daughter as almost a norm, right? You can make the living you need to make, but still have that balance of life work. So I purposely took on only 20 hours a week at Microsoft because I knew that would allow me to maintain that relationship with my daughter and the ability to help my wife and all those things during the day that she needs help with. So I want that to be the norm for her. Mm-hmm. And she even says, like, she doesn't understand it being any different for anybody else, because when I do travel to Microsoft maybe 1 or 2 days a week, which is nothing, right? I go to Microsoft for a couple of hours, maybe 1 or 2 days a week, and then I'm home again. And she told me, she's like, "Daddy, you work too much. You're gone too long," you mm-hmm. know. And I try to explain to her that that's, you know, definitely way less than most dads have, or most, you know, working families have with their children. And she just doesn't get it, because she sees it as being the norm. Like, dad is home. I can see dad whenever I want. And I want to maintain that as much as possible, but I also want to give her that perspective that it's special to have that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I can relate. I've spent the majority of the last 2 years with my kids at mm-hmm. home. My wife and I basically alternate one day on, one day off. But whenever I need to pick up a laptop, you know, not in my daddy hours, and they're like, "What are you doing? You know, you got to play with us." Luckily, they're old enough now that they can entertain themselves for a little bit, but I can certainly see that. But isn't that awesome, you know, that you can see your kids grow up?
It's amazing. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, kids are hard work, and especially depending on the types of kids you have. My kid is very much, she's got a lot of energy and she doesn't sleep a lot, and she's just going from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. So she takes a lot out of you during the day. By the time the day is done, my wife and I are just like, don't even talk to me, because we're both drained, you know. It takes both of us to make it through the day, and we're trying to work through that now too. So it's hard, but I wouldn't give it up at the same time, because I do think she's getting something out of that that maybe I didn't get when I was a kid with my parents. And don't get me wrong, the relationship I had with my parents and the relationship I still have with my parents is amazing. I wouldn't have changed it. My dad made time, even when he was exhausted after work, to spend time with his kids. And so I'm super appreciative of that. But it's just different with my daughter, and she's a different type of person, and we're different parents. I mean, generationally, I think that just happens, you know. So
this is great, because I want to know, how do you decide what's right for your kid?
You don't.
Well, as in, a lot of people parent based on how they were raised.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether you try to replicate it or go against it.
There are aspects I try to replicate, and there are absolutely aspects I try to go against. I mean, when it comes to work and work-life balance, I think, you know, previous generations didn't have the opportunity that we have today with the internet and all the different types of mediums that you can utilize to make a living. I mean, you have kids playing video games for a living now and making a very good living doing that, mm-hmm. you know, and that just wasn't a thing, you know, I want to say even 5-6 years ago. I mean, that's really, really new. So the opportunities we have changed. So in way of opportunity and the balance that you can have with your life and what you need to sustain the quality of living that you want for your family, I think that's what's changed. And for me, if I can sustain what I deem as comfortable, you know, I don't need to make more than that. I just need to make that. That's my bottom line, you mm-hmm. know, and I'm not worried about it beyond that. It's maintaining that bottom line. That's my biggest concern, and making sure that you know, the quality of life that we've come to enjoy in way of just being in our house and taking care of the house and raising our daughter the way we want to raise her and not have to worry about the financial aspects of life. That's my comfort zone. So.
No, it's a great take, because I like the fact that you're saying, you know, you have to figure out what you like and that's your baseline, but in many ways you don't need more than that. You can just figure out how to live life that yep. buys you that. You don't need to do what your neighbors are doing, right? Your friends, like, yeah. it's unimportant as long as you're happy in your life.
That's the goal, yeah.
So perhaps maybe a last question. It's also from another rad dad, Bryce Roberts from mm-hmm. NDVC. I saw him tweet the other day asking, how do you make your kids work harder? what's your take on hard work?
I don't generally like all this, this talk about hustle and you have to hustle to achieve what you want to achieve. I don't necessarily think that's true. I do think it boils down to, I mean, with my experience in building the business that I built, it boils down to what are you interested in? And for me, that's difficult because I'm interested in a lot of things and I want to build everything that comes to mind. And so that's a struggle that I have personally that I need to figure out. But I think for a lot of people, there is maybe an area that you can narrow down on and build an interest in. And I think as long as you're putting the energy into that and putting it out there and maybe building something on that interest, opportunities present themselves. And I don't necessarily think that you need to spend the days, the nights, the weekends building those opportunities. They come organically. And maybe that means, you know, making the choice to stay smaller as a business and not want to achieve, you know, the Facebook status or the Instagram status, or, you know, it's okay to make a couple $100,000 a year or even $100,000 a year or even $80,000 a year doing what you love and maintaining the lifestyle that is comfortable for you. So I think that's the thing that I definitely want to instill in my daughter. You know, do work hard on the things that you're interested in. Be conscious of the opportunities that come organically from those interests. And, you know, I think people are built either to work really hard, or they're built to work, you know, just a little bit and enjoy their lives, or mm-hmm. some people, it comes at different levels. And for me, I'm realizing that I definitely want to have a little bit more balance in the way I work and the energy I put out into the work. I'm not going to work the nights and weekends to build a new business. I'm gonna put out the energy I need to put out to create something new and keep it small this time around. Mm-hmm. So,
well, that's great. That's great advice, especially knowing what you want and working towards it in the way you want it.
And by the way, I'm not there yet. I mean,
yeah, it takes effort to consciously do it the way you want to do it, and not like everyone else is suggesting you should be doing it, right? And I think that's really important, and I hope people listen to this and realize that, you know, their life is in their hands, and they can.
I do believe that. I do believe your life is in your hands, and regardless of the ups and downs in business and doing things on your own and parenthood and how you balance that life, I'll never give up on the idea that I can make something of my own and put it out there and build on that in a balanced way. And that's what I'm striving towards now. And there are like little sparks here and there, right? You know, mm-hmm. as the years go by and I learn those lessons, I'm starting to realize some of these little opportunities that I was just talking about. And there is potential for things down the road. And I'm just trying to maintain that balance as those opportunities come along and build on those.
So if people listening to this podcast want to reach out to you about opportunities, what's the best way to find you?
I'd say Twitter, twitter.com, Jason Patrick SC. I definitely am putting out there what I'm working on and what I'm doing both personally and professionally on Twitter. I'd say that's the best way to get in touch.
And what's your favorite project that they should check out?
Right now it's, I have two projects that I'm really passionate about. One of them is Rivyt, RIVYT.com. And that is a project that allows content creators on YouTube or Twitch to create a website automatically. And, I built that with another local Seattle guy here that was in the WordPress theme business, and we kind of came together and took all our history in making video-centric WordPress themes and created this product called Rivyt. And so you can essentially hook up your YouTube channel, click a button, and a website is generated for you with all your content. So that's something that I think is really cool. And then I also have this single-page website builder called Leaflets, LEEFLETS.com. And that allows you to create different types of single-page websites that do specific things. And those are my two passion projects right now.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing the wisdom and life lessons.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
If there's something you want to, you know, deliver as a last message to the tech audience, to the parents, but I've heard a lot of great stuff. I know, tell me if you want to.
Get as much sleep as possible. Don't stay up late. Especially if you're a parent, my wife and I, we love making sure that we have the sleep we need to make it through the day. And I think, again, I don't have it in me to stay up all night long anymore building the things I need to build. You just make time with the time you have and have that balance.
For the men out there, apparently I just heard on another podcast that sleeping less makes your things smaller. So
I would know. I try to sleep as much as I can.
Yeah. So you heard it here first. Get some sleep. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it.